Welcome to the show about your company of one.
Hello, I'm Dale Callahan. I'm the author of Resumes Are Worthless, the definitive resource to becoming a company of one. And I am your guide through your journey. Welcome to the show. Hello again, this is Dale Callahan, and we are welcoming you to this is episode number 2 of the podcast, The Company of One. I just wanted to thank you for listening, for those of you that have been taking part. You know, this is a new podcast, and it's important to say that because some of the things we'll talk about today are some of the questions I get. I receive questions all the time from people that are trying to break out of corporate America. And I say that not meaning that they necessarily hate their job, but they're looking for alternatives, looking for that entrepreneurial spirit. I kind of want to dive into a few of these questions just today without doing much else. I will say that generally when I get these questions, there's either one or two things happening. Number one, there is a loss of fulfillment. You know, I'm in a corporate job, and I feel like there's more. I feel like there's something I would like to do that the corporate job doesn't offer. And many of these people, by the way, they love their jobs. They love the people they work with. I mean, not everybody, obviously, but many of them love the people they work with, love the company. But they just, as one guy tells me, he says, I could do my job with both hands tied behind my back, and I feel as if I am not utilizing my skills very well. The other thing that you see in the other alternative is when people have developed a driving passion for something, and they can't do what they want to do, or they cannot perform that function in their corporation, either because that's not what their corporation does or there's limiting factors. So that's some of the questions. So let me just kick in here. The first question, this comes from Dave in New Orleans. He says, you know, Dale, I want to start something. I have a very entrepreneurial spirit, but I don't know where to start. How do I find my calling in a venture that actually makes sense? Now, what Dave is saying by actually makes sense, I think, is I want to be able to make money. I don't want to be starving. And by the way, Dave has a very good job, very well paid, very strong background in what he's doing, high-ranking individual, let's put it that way. I won't give you everything about Dave, but because I don't have permission. But, you know, this is a question I get a lot of times is, how do I find the calling? How do I know what to do? And so I'm going to give you a couple of different points. And by the way, there's these questions, I'm going to throw, you know, there's a couple of questions related to how do I find my calling. And then we'll wrap up with some key principles and finding that calling and where to start. So there's a couple of ideas here that I'm going to say that probably applies to every one of these questions. Is there's five key ideas here. Is I think when you first are looking for something and you don't know what it is, you first need to be aware that you have a limited view. And I say that in the sense that if you remember when you did career testing maybe in high school or college, and you took these career tests and they come out and they tell you your personality or your characteristics are a lot like a bus driver, a farmer, a doctor, a lawyer. Those things don't necessarily point you to the right career. Now, there are various career tests. I'm not a big fan of career tests because they are so limiting. Not because there's anything wrong with the test, but because there's so many opportunities beyond what we know of today. For example, a gentleman I was meeting with the other day, he was an actor. He liked to do commercials, worked with agents locally, and he was moving to a different city with his main job, or at least the possibility of moving to a different city. He was telling me, you know, I'm going to have to find a new agent and kind of start all over in the acting community. But he loved doing this. So the normal path for an actor of that, you know, and again, we're not talking about Hollywood, but probably true of the Hollywood actors too, is you find agents and you do some things and you do some taping, some demos, and you hope the agent can get you some stuff to do, and you kind of wait. That's normal. We expect that. Now, whether you know about acting, but every career has a normal path. You know, if we look at healthcare, the normal path is to go get an education, go get skill sets, work with somebody. For in the case of a medical doctor, it's years and years and years and lots of money of training. That's a normal path to help people with healthcare. But what I was telling this guy is, I was telling him, you know, that's one path, and you have to get out of your limited view. You have to expand your view. How do you do that? And I'm gonna pick, you know, in his case, I told him, hey, if any of you aren't familiar, I recommend you go to YouTube and search on Shaytards. Crazy name, but the Shaytards, and this is a family that they were seeing reality TV, and they were thinking, man, the reality TV is anything but reality. So they took a camera and just started filming themselves around the family, and the husband, the wife, and I think they have two children. Well, it became such a phenomenon on YouTube, a free network. Now, notice this is costing them no money, that now they have a camera crew that pretty much lives with them and follows them around, and they're like rock stars in this world. They're making a full-time living doing this. So they're still acting. They're still doing video. But instead of waiting on the agent, they took control. And they did it in a very bizarre and unusual way. You wouldn't expect to be able to make any money off of YouTube. Clearly, lots of people do. So you need to be aware that you have a limited view in things and think about, what are the other options to do what I want to do? And one way to do this, to kind of think about where to get, is the second point here, is brainstorming. And if you go to my website, DaleCallahan.com, there's a How to Find My Calling, a little ebook, or you can look at the Resumes Are Worthless book itself that some of the material comes out of. You just want to brainstorm how to find your calling. And we won't go into all that right now, but part C, you know, I'm going to say here, because this is kind of a multi-part question, is read, observe, and explore. Read, observe, and explore. I was watching, if you know the pediatric neurosurgeon Ben Carson, very famous for surgeries and his upbringing and his Christian testimony. I've read about him several times, and he talks about his mom. His mom was poor, had, I believe, a third grade education, could not read. His mom used to observe that she worked for wealthy people, and she observed them. And then she mimicked what they did. Now, think about that for a minute. So many of us are trying to get in front of people, and how do you learn what the wealthy people did? Well, she was working as probably a maid or something for wealthy people. And she noticed a couple of things. She noticed that people that got on welfare never got off. So she refused welfare. The second thing she noticed is that the wealthy people read a lot. They didn't have the TV on. They read a lot. So she turned off the TV with her kids and put books in their hands and told them to go to read, and even though she could not read. And she didn't even tell her kids that she could not read. They thought she could. So, you know, she's just a woman that's brilliant. She's observing what she doesn't want life to be like, what makes their life like that, and she's observing what she does want life to be like, and she's mimicking it. Imperfect, or as perfect as it is, you know, it's simple. How often can we do that? You know, in terms of reading, you know, we got to get out and think about some other things. Some great, I mean, if you read the book Resumes Are Worthless, my book, and I've got lots of references. Dan Miller has books on, he has several books in the area, but 48 Days to the Work You Love is probably his classic. Career Renegade by Jonathan Fields. That's really an interesting book. I really love that because he's got lots of stories of people doing it differently. Rich Dad, Poor Dad, great book. Now, these books aren't necessarily going to be your answer, any one of them, but they make you think differently. So another thing is thinking with pen and paper. I've got this as point D here on my notes. Thinking with pen and paper. And I got this from Earl Nightingale, who tells, I remember him saying, people don't think anymore. We don't think. And just sit down and spend some time with coffee or Coke and just write at the top of paper, hey, I need extra income. Brainstorm. What do I love to do? What could I do to make a living? It's kind of like the brainstorming exercises, the calling, but just doing it all the time. I mean, for long periods of time, when I'm feel like I'm in a rut or kind of looking to what to do next, or at least weekly I do this, I just sit down and kind of think through things. Incredible ideas come on paper that you're just thinking. And think about having a different conversation as far as thinking. Like a lot of times when we speak to our spouse, we're saying, you know, we don't have enough money, and we're whining and we're complaining about we don't have enough money. Sometimes it generates into an argument. Instead, ask yourself, how can we make more money? How can we help people? How can we serve the community we enjoy serving? So then the last point here is constantly do reverse interviews. This goes back to the calling exercise that's referenced in you can find out how to do a reverse interview on my site. Look up reverse interviews. It's probably linked there, DaleCallahan.com, or on the book Resumes Are Worthless, or in the calling exercise. A reverse interview is going out talking to those people who are doing what you think you might want to do and that are successful at it, and just listening and learning. All of this is about observing. Most of this, when you're looking for something to do and you have that entrepreneurial spirit, it's just, how can I think differently? That would be the key. Now we want to look at another question. This one I got from a lady that she had called to meet with me, and she'd asked her husband to introduce me to her, and we sat down and we had coffee, and she was kind of telling me a story. She works in a public school system. She's a math teacher, and you ever meet with people and they just seem vibrant and bubbly, and you know, you feel like, man, I think I would like being a student in your math class. And that's how she struck me as a. And she was just telling me about, she has a big weakness in what she does. What we do in connecting math with kids, a lot of times they struggle, especially in some inner city schools. And she's developed some ways, or maybe improved some ways on teaching kids and helping them connect with math. And she was saying, how do I get this into the public school system? How do I get this accepted by everybody? How can I make money by getting the school systems to buy this from me? Now, I see this question in some frame or matter a lot like this often. And the next question will have something to do with that too. And I'm going to tell you what I told her. It's very difficult to change a system. As I talked to her, I got the sense that she was well-respected in her school system, that as far as math teachers, she was well-respected in what she did, that I also asked her, I said, you know, if I look at your school system, if I walk in and meet with all the faculty, how many of them are as passionate about teaching as you are? Because I'm thinking, if everybody's as passionate as she is, this has got to be a top-rated school. But it's not. It was an inner city school. And she was like, well, there may be one or two others. Yeah, that's probably reasonable. You know, the others are just kind of there. They're doing their job. And, you know, they may be doing an excellent job, but they're, you know, they get beat down after a period of time. So it's hard just to change a system. So what we talked about is I said, you know, what you said you care about is teaching kids. And I hear this a lot, too. I love to do X, so I want to change Y. She loves to teach kids, so she wants to change the public school system. I'm like, no, focus in on that customer, the kids. Focus in on who you want to help, what you love doing. Now, let's think about, as we step back from the public school system, because that's one way of doing it. How could you do this? You know, so you could tutor. Obviously, if this girl offered a tutoring service, she would find herself highly successful in what she is doing, just because her energy. And here, there's a huge demand for tutoring services. I mean, lots of people liking significant amounts of money tutoring, especially things like higher level math. You know, and I said, you know, what you might also could do is you develop a platform. And I'm borrowing from Michael Hyatt's, using his terminology. Michael Hyatt's got the book Platform. Excellent, excellent. I just can't say enough about how well put together the material is in the book Platform. But, you know, as you're doing that, how can you go out there and film, blog, film some things on YouTube of showing how to do this, create you a YouTube channel, do a blog. In other words, you want to develop yourself as an expert in this area and have people start, you know, attract attention to what you're doing just by starting today, doing simple stuff, which is, by the way, what she's doing now. She's got a blog out there that she has actually started. I will link to that blog on the notes that you can see. She hasn't done a significant amount, but she is doing something. You want to work into the school, you know, and by the way, if you think about Khan Academy. Now, if you're not familiar with Khan Academy, it's a major site, but it's K-H-A-N Academy, Khan Academy. A huge site that started out basically teaching kids math, and now they do all kind of stuff. But they're little short videos. They're kind of clunky. They're not necessarily very high-end videos. But wow, what a following he has. You also want to think about working into the school system after you have a following. And so what I'm telling you is you don't have to give up on the dream. You don't have to give up on changing the school system. But you kind of you get your influence a little bit at a time. If you just say, I'm going to go pound on the school system and pound on educator doors, man, that's a tough road. That's a tough road. And you may never get the audience because, again, you go back to that customer issue. They think they're doing an okay job probably. Their issues are probably more funding. How do I do this? How do I deal? You know, they got all kinds of issues. A better way to teach math is probably not high on their list, like it or not. But as you start to develop some influence and a following, you know, you might end up with parents going back to the school system and influencing it. But, you know, and I'm not discouraging those people who just like to fight the system and all, but, you know, why? Why go to all that energy? Focus on the customer that you're really trying to serve and make that your first biggest thing. Because you can do that now. You can do that today. In this gal's case, she can put up a blog. She can throw up some of her stuff. Have it up there. She can do some videos. She can start tutoring. All this she can start doing instantaneously. And I mean that. I don't mean plan for months to do it. I mean tonight. Tonight she can start doing it. Same thing for you. If you've got something like this where you really love to do something, what's stopping you? Just do it and do it now. We'll talk about that in some of the points later about some of the key points because I know what's stopping you because it stops me so often. Okay, let me deal with another question here. This one comes from, and I'm not going to use the name here properly as I'm probably not doing in a couple of these for the reasons of, if I don't have permission and sometimes the details on new business ventures are, you know, obviously we have some protected in intellectual property here. But this gal sends me an email. She says, I saw you in a newspaper article where somebody had interviewed you, and I'm really, what you said really connected with me. I had a friend killed in a plane accident where the plane lost airspeed, and no one knew what was happening, including the pilots, because of instrumentation issues. I've worked for years to develop a tool that will solve that problem. I am passionate, but I do not know or do not have the funds to make these devices and this technology and get it connected into the carriers or to the airlines. What do I do? And this is somebody from, we won't mention where she's from again, but So I told her to call me. So we had a conversation one Saturday morning, I believe. And, you know, essentially it came down. She was very passionate. She's invested time, energy, and money. She has no, as I remember, she wasn't a technical expert per se, but she had developed incredible amount of expertise solving this problem, and it solved the problem. And as I talked to her, I remember asking her, you know, do you have any competitors? And yes, there was a company, you know, another company that was selling their devices, but they weren't near as good as her device. Very insufficient in several ways. And she's actually had been talking to the engineer in that company, you know, which, you know, could have some issues. But basically, I hear this a lot. This is a lot like the school system problem. You're dealing with, anytime you're dealing with major infrastructure, and I'll throw the school system in as a major infrastructure, airlines, major infrastructure, air carriers, you know, the manufacturers of aircraft, major infrastructure, multi-million dollar, you know, devices, machines, very process oriented, how you put these things together and how you retrofit, lots of regulations, lots of standards, lots of bureaucracy to go through to fly aircraft, to build aircraft at this level. You know, so, you know, as we were talking about it, she was telling me, I've already invested, you know, a good chunk of money in this. I want to solve the problem because I know how to solve the problem. So I kind of just talked her through this, and this may fit with you too. You may have something, some big giant problem that you're trying to solve. And I tried to talk, it's kind of like the school system thing again. Do you even know this is a problem that they care about? And I don't mean we care about planes falling out of the air. We certainly do. But I mean, do they think they know how to handle this now because they've developed a better procedure and process for pilots that costs them no money except maybe a little bit of training, maybe a different checklist, that the problem is basically solved? You know, and she didn't think it was, of course, because when we have our idea and our pets, you know, we think it's the only way to solve it. But, you know, getting, running in and connecting with the airlines so you're thinking about the major carriers and the major manufacturers, getting into them and say, hey, look at my wonderful little device. I'd like you to put it on every aircraft you own or every aircraft you build. That's very difficult. Very difficult. I've seen a lot of this with automotive manufacturer. People try to get stuff in with the automotive manufacturers. And these guys are hammered constantly with ideas and opportunities, and they have their own teams. And to throw something else in is very, very complex. So what she was looking at was, how do you get in front of these people who have influence? And, you know, as I talked to her, I said, you know, what does it cost to? Because she said, well, we'd like to retrofit all the aircraft that are in the air now, and she had some good numbers. She actually knew a lot about what she was talking about. She was not naive in any way. She said it's about a $50,000 retrofit. You know, in her case, well, that's just nothing. Well, you know, to an airline with pretty tight margins, I wouldn't say that's nothing. So again, you're like, how big is the problem, and what is the major problems these airlines had? So what I had suggested to her to do is kind of play a reverse interview game. Try to find the key decision makers in these large companies, whether it's the Boeings, whether it's the airlines. Find some key decision makers and ask them and learn about where their big safety issues are. Because, you know, they may have some giant, giant safety issues that are not directly connected to hers, or they may have some giant safety issues that are loosely connected to hers, and she has something to talk about. I mean, so often we are trying to tell people what we have, and if we just listen, they'll tell us what they want. And that's the kind of what I was trying to get to her. You know, and so the other thing, you know, we kind of took a multi-approach here. I told her, you know, she had been talking to the engineer at the competitor, and I said, you know, what I would probably do is try to find the person with influence, not the engineer. I say that. I'm an engineer. But, you know, In a large company or a reasonable size company, the engineer may not be the person with influence. Try to find the person with influence inside that company and get up there and talk to them about their technologies. They might want to buy your stuff. I mean, they already have relationships with the carriers. They are already doing it. They already have a brand name that's associated. Why not just sell them what you have? Make a deal with him, partner. If you think your device is better and you're passionate about helping, they have the path to do it. They already have money invested to do it. So just work with them. You know, and I think about people like Dyson. I don't know if you're familiar with Dyson vacuum cleaners. When Dyson first came up with, he got on his kitchen table and came up with a better way to make a vacuum cleaner because he was trying to vacuum stuff up and realized this vacuum cleaner won't suck up dirt off the floor. So he developed this wind tunnel technology. That's probably not exactly what he would call it, but and he thought, wow, this is huge. I'm gonna get it on vacuum cleaners. So he went to the major manufacturers. Hoover, you know, that they wouldn't listen to them. And they're not even building aircraft. They're just building vacuum cleaners. But they're, you know, the concept they had was like, well, this is better, maybe. I don't even know if they paid much attention to them, but they might think this is better, but we have a process, we have a market, it's working. We're not going to mess it up. To throw this in the manufacturing process costs a lot of money. And it doesn't really add us any value because our customers are not complaining about the vacuum cleaners not vacuuming. They're complaining about other stuff. So what he did is he kept pounding and pounding and pounding away until he found a manufacturer in Japan that would buy his idea. So he did. He went and sold his idea to the people in Japan. And he basically sold his entire intellectual property. Now, that sounds kind of crazy because you're like, wait a minute, Dyson is the vacuum cleaner. What he did is then he came home. Now he had some money in his pocket. He still felt like there was more to this idea. So he actually improved upon the idea after he sold the original. And then now he had money to build his own vacuum cleaners. And what we think of as Dyson today is his company. You know, he's made $1 billion on that, starting with that vacuum cleaner idea. But so that's kind of, you know, what my suggestion to her was, a kind of approach your competitor and see if you can do that. You might also approach smaller manufacturers, you know, small jet manufacturers, and see if they would be interested. Connect to key players. Go to conferences. Go to associated meetings. It's, you know, it may be hard to call a company and get in. And by the way, people do this all the time to get jobs. It may be hard to get in side of a company and get to the right level person you need to do to make the decision, because they have all these gatekeepers, and they, you know, they're always busy. They're always in a meeting. You know, it's not that the gatekeeper's really trying to keep people away, but they're just always busy. They, you know, most corporate people are stuck in meetings all day. So instead, find out associations where they're at. Find out what meetings they go to that are outside the corporation that anybody can go to. Find out what trade shows that they will be at. Go to these places and meet them and talk to them on the floor in a less stuffy setting. You know, and just, you know, have honest conversations and see if you cannot get their ear and have them listen to you. You know, and the other thing was with her, I said, you know, instead of making a device, why don't you just, you're an expert in the field. Why don't you start looking for ways to develop influence? Again, is it blogging? Is it writing articles? Is it being a consultant for airlines? And she was telling me, well, I don't have any expertise in this. I'm not an engineer, but I am an engineer. I'm not an aeronautical person, but I could just tell this lady had a lot of expertise. She didn't have all the names and all the degrees, but she had a tremendous amount of expertise from researching this. She probably could add significant value as a consultant. And so what I was suggesting to her is, why don't we just start consulting with them? You start to develop, you know, as you start consulting with people and they start buying into what you're doing and how you can help, I said, you might be able to help by helping them improve processes, improve that checklist, do things that are simple as a consultant. And then as you get, you know, because what you're trying to do is get them to buy your name, that they start, you start to develop influence because now you're a trusted entity. Nobody listens to that outsider who just comes knocking on the door and says, I have a better idea. You first have to gain influence and respect. Again, that's kind of back to the Michael Hyatt's platform idea. You first have to develop a platform for people to listen to you. And then, now your device has not only do you have a device, but you have a name to go behind it. Now, there's some key questions that we've just looked at. And these questions, I get questions like these kind of varied at all times. And I'm going to try to, there's some key principles to getting started. So I want to really cover these key principles to help you get started if you're kind of in the situation these people are. And there's three key principles. And I'm going to just say it's about that simple. We've started companies along these three key principles, and usually when we do something more complicated than this, it's cost a lot more money, and sometimes it's a flop. We all have flops. Yeah. So the first one is find something you do already, something you wish other people would offer so you could buy it. As you're looking to start a company, that's probably the best thing, is something that you would love to buy. People that go out there and try to start something because they think, hey, there's a great market, there's a lot of money to be made in X, Y, and Z, because they realize it, they see it, they observe it, but it's not something they care about. Yeah, that's a recipe for disaster. You've got to love the market. You've got to be in the market already. And, you know, think about one of the best things that ever happens is that you suddenly become, you know, for instance, if you love, if you love golf and you're always on golf courses and you think, wow, I think, you know, I wish people would sell golf clubs over the internet. Now, I'm sure they do, but just as an example, but there's I wish people would do that and do that in a way that kind of customized the sets and did it over the internet. Think about if you started doing that. Now what's happening is you've got golf clubs all around your house, if you're doing this out of your home, as a tax write-off. Now, I'm not saying you play business games just for a tax write-off, but take the advantages that you can. You know, and suddenly you are surrounded by all the things that you love to do. Now, you may find, you know, by the way, if you look at this, you may find there's already people doing similar things to what you do. That's okay. You improve and you make it different. If you're in a market where there's nobody doing anything like it, nobody's serving that need, then it's probably not a need. So whenever people tell me there's no competition and there's nobody else doing this, you know, there's two things I know about them. Number one is they're ignorant, because that means they haven't researched their market. Because just as soon as you start a business and you think you're the only one, that next day you realize there's 15 others out there doing exactly what you're doing. Or the alternative, nobody's doing what you're doing because nobody cares, nobody wants to buy it. So if you look at a market and there is no competition that you can find, you either have not done your research or nobody cares. For instance, what I do, my focus is helping people find alternative to corporate jobs. Now, also, I help people find that entrepreneurial spirit inside companies. How do you take yourself and make yourself into that company of one? I'm all about what I would call a revenue consultant. I help people increase their revenue, whether it's personal, whether it's as a business. When I look at people, there's Pam Slim, Escape from Cubicle Insanity, the book she's written, Dan Miller, Jonathan Fields. All these people are very successful. They're doing similar things to what I'm doing. My stuff comes outside of the university, stuff that I brought into the university and I'm doing, and doing in executive graduate programs. So, you know, I've got a different platform. I'm doing it differently. A lot of things I do differently. You know, if you sit Dan and I together, for instance, while I have the highest respect in the world for Dan, would we disagree on some things? Absolutely. We would have two different approaches on a couple of things. But that's okay. That's the whole reason that there's alternatives out there. You know, and I'm not hurting any of these people by doing what I'm doing, and because my niche is a little different. I have a different audience than they have. And so will you. So even if you find somebody that you love what they're doing and you think, wow, I wish they did that a little differently, well, that may be your alternative to do something. So the key here is find something that you already do. So find some products and services that you wish were out there and offer them. And you're going to say, I'm not an expert. That's okay. You will be. Number two, the second principle, start now. Now, when I say now, I don't mean start in 4 months, 6 months, a year after you've planned. I mean start today, start tonight. By the time the sun rises, start. Now, that sounds a little drastic, and you're thinking, well, Dale, you're being a little dramatic. I'm not. I'm being very serious. It's a mistake I make. And, you know, my greatest mistake is always not starting now. Think about this podcast. We're doing this podcast. We've probably invested, $200 in a logo. Now, some people who start podcasts, they invest hundreds and hundreds of dollars on things and equipment, and they got to get everything just right. And, you know, they may have thousands of dollars worth of podcasting equipment sitting around and never record a podcast. That happens all the time in business. You know, and some people start and they start out and it's very clunky. They have very cheap equipment and it just sounds totally awful. You may think that I'm one of them. But the point is start. If, you know, if we decide these podcasts are the things that are working and they're connecting with people, then dadgummit, when you listen to our podcast, you know, a month or 2 months or 3 months or 6 months from now, you're going to come back and listen to this one and say, man, Dale, this was really awful. Yeah, probably. That's the point. The point is you start now and you improve. You either improve quality, you improve content, you improve something. And it's really nice because once you start, do you know how you're going to improve? You may think you know, but you know because what your customers and your clients start to tell you. We started in the homeschool math education. We have a company called Ask Dr. Callahan that, the way the company got its name is even because we started overnight without thinking. So not necessarily the kind of name that we would think about, but we started, you know, we saw a need in the homeschool math education for higher level. We kind of wanted to solve the problem for us, for our older children as they were in high school. How do we solve their math problem? Because a lot of the homeschool stuff that was pretty weak. My wife said we ought to record this stuff because both her and I are engineers. So we ought to record some videos and teach the stuff the way we think it needs to be taught from a college level. So I was planning. I was like, okay, we need high-end production and we need to spend this money. And she just finally said, would you just shut up and go down, turn the camera on, get on a whiteboard and start teaching? That sounds stupid. But her point that finally hit home to me is she just looks me in the eye and she says, Dale, they don't care about quality. They want teaching. Wow, that was eye-opening. So I did that. We went out. We recorded. We just slapped everything together. You know what? And we realized customers have not complained about that. Customers complain about lots of stuff, and they want different things, but they don't want the quality of the video to change in terms of high-end production, stuff like that. Going back to Khan Academy, if you look at his productions, most of them are fairly, some of them are even, he even says, well, I'm glad this isn't professional, as he's dropping his mouse, you know, during the video and doesn't even edit it, you know. And so as you look at this, you have to understand what the customer wants, but you just start now and you see what happens. That was a company that we started, and we were just selling onesies and twosies, and suddenly before you know it, we have to change production methodologies in terms of how we produce DVDs and duplicate them because we were so busy. So it's that start now. And I'm going to say also on point three, which is related, avoid the perfection syndrome. Avoid the perfection syndrome. And this usually is why we cannot start now. You just have to do it. You have to get started, and you have to get started now. And you have to allow your products and your services to not be perfect. Throw it out there, get the best thing you can, and let it happen. If you're a consultant, if you want to go out there and be a consultant in something, write up in Microsoft Word a quick little brochure, put out 5 or 6 points on there about what you can do and how you can help them and what pain points you can solve for your customers. Spell check it, something I'm terrible at doing, by the way. Clean it up the best you can within an hour, print them out, and hand them out to people. And then as you talk to customers and you learn from customers and you connect with customers, change it. Do it. If you look at our packaging that we started doing in the homeschooling, we didn't have any packaging, and I needed to, we needed some DVD things, and we needed, nice little labels on the DVDs. And we were like, just forget it. We went out to Sam's and bought these DVD cases, these little clear multicolor cases, and we would put them in there. There's no label, no paperwork. We did have a little label printer, so it was printed pretty crudely on the DVD. And we would put 8 DVDs in these little individual cases and tape them together with masking tape. I kid you not. I mean, pretty ugly product presentation. Not the way you would normally do it. But you know what? Customers didn't really care. I mean, right now we have, shrink-wrapped material with high-end production Photoshop art that are done by graphic artists. The discs are produced by somebody that knows what they're doing a lot better than we used to do it on our home computer. So all this is done, and it looks a lot nicer. It looks a lot cleaner. It's not really that hard to do, but if we would have tried to start from there and get to that 60-mile-an-hour position or 100-mile-an-hour position, wherever we are, we would have never done it because it's, how those little bitty incremental tasks are overwhelming when you start. And that's why the perfection syndrome will stop you in your tracks. Most businesses fail because they never start. A business is only a business when it starts to generate revenue. So let me hit those again. Find something that you want the market to offer. Find something that you love to do and offer it. Start now, start tonight, and 3, avoid the perfection syndrome. And with that, with those key principles, let me hit those again because I don't think I can say that enough. Find something that you love to do already. Find the market space that you care about. Find things that you're passionate about. 2, start today, start now, do it now. And 3, avoid perfection syndrome. Just start and grow. As somebody was telling me one time as we were looking at going into a mission field, a great advisor told me, Dale, you don't go into ministry. You don't go into missions. You grow into it. That was really great advice because our ministry fields right now and the kind of things that we do to minister to people, by the way, we make profit off of it, it's doing this, ministering to people's hearts, helping them find where God's called them to be. That's not the way we imagined it in the first place. That wasn't the way we did it. So, you don't go into business, you grow into business. So, look, I'm always wanting to help people. I love to be part of something. I love to see what other, that's the great thing about our graduate program. There's so much energy in finding what people are doing. I love when people send me emails and tell me the cool, crazy things they're involved with, the crazy questions they've got because of the dilemmas they found themselves in. So send the questions. Send them to me in email. You can reach me at email at dcallahan@UAB, University of Alabama, Birmingham, uab.edu. Put them to me in Twitter or Facebook. You can find me just at Dale Callahan on both of those. Send them to me, and we have the audio link on our on the website where you can actually audio a question in. Some people do that. Just send me a question, and if you want us to hit it on this show, just say, hey, I'd like you to address this in the podcast or on the radio show since this is on Blog Talk Radio also. I would like you to hit this answer to this question, but feel free to ask questions. not of just me, but of everyone. You know, that you learn by asking questions, and everybody gives you different perspectives on things, and that's what you should do. It's that with many counselors, thinking, find Bible references to that. You know, and feel free, connect with me. Connect with me on LinkedIn, on the web, on Twitter. You know, follow what we're doing. You know, you can find my blog at delcallahan.com. Again, you can find me on Twitter and Facebook. And I want to think, be an advocate, be a public person in the sense of let your voice be heard. Write us on Twitter, on iTunes, I'm sorry. Write us on iTunes. Tell us what you think. Give us some feedback. What would you like to see better? You know, don't be just silent. If you find something that connects with you fairly decently, if the show is connecting with you and hitting you on some questions that you care about, but there's something that's missing, let us know. We really, and this is for you. This is to be improved for you. The best way to do that is for you to tell us what to do. So I'm going to leave you that. I'm going to leave you with a one question. Between now and next week, what can you make happen in the next week? What can you make happen in the next week? You have 7 days. Then won't you find that one you dreamin' of? Swear up and down to God above, that's you flat on it.